All right. Normally, I'd want to hear the stories, but if you got a great one, just text me, email me, Facebook me, let me know what it is. The question I have to wrap this up is, how many tables had somebody say Pastor Don as the craziest person? Yeah. There are lots of stories. Pastor Don, he's a crazy driver. But this morning, as Pastor Don mentioned, we're continuing this AKA, otherwise known as, series. And we're talking about a guy by the name of Jehu. And Jehu was given this nickname of the Madman. And it was based on his reckless style of driving his chariot. In 2 Kings chapter 9, verse 20, it says this. So here's the setting of this verse. Jehu is leading an army to take to go to battle against some kings. And the kings are like in some kind of fortification, and they see the cloud of dust off in the distance, right? So you can kind of see that. Imagine what that's like. Just a cloud of dust. You can't really see what's going on. Who is that out there? And so they send a messenger out to find out, are you coming to do battle with us, or are you coming in peace? And so this is what 2 Kings 9:20 says. It says, a watchman exclaimed, the messenger has met them, but he isn't returning either. And then he says this, it must be Jehu, son of Nimshi, for he's driving like a madman. All they can see is just like a cloud of dust and a few people, but he was such a crazy driver that it was a characteristic. Everybody knew that Jehu was this wild driver. But it wasn't just in the way that he drove that he was a madman. So to help us understand who Jehu was, I'd like to start off this morning with a little cultural pop quiz, all right? And we're a week ahead of Father's Day. Ladies, next week is Father's Day. It's just a PSA there. I want to do a little pop quiz, but guys, we're like going to rock this one out, all right? We're going to kill it. So the quiz is about some movies, all right? And so I'm going to give you a character's name. And then what we have to do collectively is come up with the actor and the movie, or movies, right? Because sometimes it's a series. So we'll start off. The first one, the guy's name is John Rambo. Yeah, don't show the pictures yet, because that'll give it away. John Rambo. So we would say who? Sylvester Stallone. And how many movies were there? This is the tough part. Too many, yeah. Three? I'm counting, still counting. No, there's four. Yeah, First Blood was the very first one. Then there was Rambo, First Blood Part 2, Rambo 3, and then Rambo Last Blood. And there'll be more? There is? All starring Sylvester Stallone? Really? I didn't know that. Chris knows more than the internet, everybody. So then also, here's what I found out. This is crazy. There's actually a cartoon series. I didn't know that. Anyways. All right. Don't show the picture. Here's the character. Jason Bourne. Matt Damon. That's right. And what are the movies in that series? How many? Let's start with how many? I heard three. There's four Bourne movies, but one doesn't have them in it. Yep, so there's three. There's Bourne Identity, Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum. Yep. All right, there he is. Look at how tough he looks. Here's the next one, John Wick. Keanu Reeves. There's four. Chris, that's shocking to me. I don't know why. Can you name them? Oh, kind of. Yeah, that's true. They actually, to change it up, you know, because these guys are, it's an art, right? I mean, you can't just do John Wick 1, 2, 3, 4. That's John Wick chapter 2, right? To make it artistic. John Wick chapter 3, and then they make up a word called parabellum. I think it's a made-up word, but anyways. And then the fourth one is John Wick chapter 4. And fine, I think, I'm hoping it's those are done. All right, now we're going to start getting into maybe some more challenging ones. This one is Robert McCall. Crickets. Equalizer, very good. Somebody give Larry Miller a pat on the back. Star, and who stars in that? Denzel Washington. And he did three of those. All right. Now, these last two are going to be tough. If we get these, man, I don't know. I don't know what it says about our church if we get these. But anyways, Nak Min Kwan. I know it. This is one of my all-time favorite movies. Not Karate Kid. I'll give you the actor. The actor's name is Jackie Chan. There he is. That's a picture of him from this movie. It's a movie by the name of The Foreigner. Kirsten's like, oh, I know this. You made me watch it. I enjoyed it. It's a good movie. And then this last one, this is going to be nearly impossible, but I'll tell you the date that the movie was made, 1973. The character's name is Lee. No last name. Just Lee. Enter the Dragon. All right, Bryce, way to go. That wasn't as tough as I thought it would be. So Jehu was very much like these guys. He was just a one-man wrecking team. But there's one big difference between Jehu and these guys, and that is that he was an actual guy. Interesting thing about Jehu is his name actually shows up in a lot of archaeological finds in other countries from that period of time. So there's no doubt that he was an actual guy. And what that means to us is the Bible is actually a piece of history. It's like a history book, right? And these people actually lived these lives. They actually went through these things that they go through that we read in the Bible. And that means that their stories are relevant to us. They're not a story as in, you know, John Wick or whoever. These are actual people that actually lived these things out. And so as we go into this and we start to study the life of Jehu today, I hope that you'll understand the reason we can do this and draw lessons from them is they actually lived life, just like we did. So to understand Jehu's life, it's good to understand a little bit of the background, the situation that he finds himself in. When we first learn about Jehu is actually in 1 Kings. So we start hearing about Jehu in 1 Kings, and then we finally wrap up in 2 Kings about him. And when we first hear about him, the king is a guy by the name of Ahab. And the first thing we have to understand is that Ahab's wickedness was super extreme. This is what it says in 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 30. It says, "But Ahab, son of Omri, did what was evil in the Lord's sight, even more than any of the kings before him. As though it were not enough to follow a sinful example of Jeroboam, he married Jezebel, the daughter of King Ethbaal of the Sidonians, and he began to bow down and worship to Baal." So here's a couple things for us to understand. Just how wicked was Ahab. Ahab, it says that he continued on in the sinful example of Jeroboam. So what was the sinful example of Jeroboam? Again, we have to back up a little more to understand the children of Israel, you'll recall, they begged God to have a king, right? So God had created this country for them, set them up, established them. He was their king, but they said, no, that's not good enough. We want to be like the other countries. And they begged and begged and begged God to have a king. And so they finally get a king. And they make it all the way through three kings, Saul, David, Solomon, and they find themselves in a civil war. And at that point, the nation of Israel divides into two kingdoms. There's the 10 northern tribes, and there's the 2 southern tribes. And Jeroboam was the first of the first king of the northern tribes. So if you think back to what you know about our Civil War, does anybody remember where did our Civil War start? Where were the first shots fired? Fort Sumter, yeah. So whenever you do a Civil War, there's all these shared resources that you've got to figure out who's going to control what, right? And our Civil War started at Fort Sumter because why? Does anybody know why? It's positioned in the bay, the center of the bay, for Charleston. And it controlled traffic coming in and out of there. And so as the Union forces controlled that, then the southern states no longer controlled commerce through Charleston's port. So they needed that. So that was the first fight, the first shots were fired in our Civil War over a resource. The same was true when the countries split in Israel. There were shared resources. And the biggest shared resource they had was the temple. See, back in those days, a country's identity revolved around the god that they worshipped, okay? And when they were successful as a country, it was all because of the god they worshipped, right? And when they weren't, it meant that their god wasn't so good. So that identity as a Israelite was not just, I'm part of this country. It was also that I am a follower of Yahweh. So when they split into two nations, two countries, Jeroboam had a decision he had to make. And that decision is, who are we going to worship? Where are we going to worship them? And so what we find out is Jeroboam decided to go what we would call old school, right? And he made a couple golden calves. Does that sound familiar to you guys? Aaron did the same thing when the children of Israel left Egypt. So he made a couple golden calves, and he started two new places to worship these calves. He's like, it's just too inconvenient for us to go all the way down to Jerusalem. We're going to have two places. The northern tribes are going to be better. You're going to have two places to go worship. And so that was the sinful example that Jeroboam set. And it says that Ahab followed in that example. He continued to encourage people to sacrifice to these gods. But then the next thing is, it doesn't end there, right? The second part of this is he decides to marry this lady from Sidon. This is a common practice in the ancient world. Actually, up until, I don't know if you guys have ever heard this, but in the First World War, every country that fought in that, except for the United States, the heads of states were related to Queen Victoria. So it used to be a common practice that if I was a king of this country and I wanted to have good relationships with the next door country, I'd marry one of my kids off to that country, and that would hopefully encourage us to get along, right? And so that's what Ahab did. He's like, Sidon, they're our next door neighbors. I want to get along. So he married one of the king of Sidon's daughters, which is probably not the best decision. But here's the worst part, is that she brought this new god into the northern tribes. The god's name was Baal. And along with that, Baal worshipers would sacrifice children to this god. So they went from worshiping these golden calves to and sacrificing animals to now they're worshiping another god that they have to sacrifice their children to. So do you see how this is like a spiral downward? Then we couple that with the fact that Jezebel was just a terrible person. So Ahab did not marry well. And there was still a remnant in the northern tribes of people that followed the one true God. And they'd walk around telling everybody, we need to change, we need to get better, we need to stop doing these things. And Jezebel didn't like that. She didn't like that people were pointing out her flaws. So much so that she started trying to actively kill them. And she did kill some. And all of this leads to God just saying, I've had enough. I've had enough. Ahab, you're a terrible king, and your wife, she's out of control. Therefore, I'm going to put a curse on you. And God tells Ahab through a prophet that I'm going to remove you as king, and I'm going to remove your family from being able to be king. And so this is the situation that Jehu finds himself in when he's anointed king. So if we look at 2 Kings chapter 9, so we're going from 1 Kings, we're fast-forwarding all the way up to 2 Kings chapter 9. And this is what the Bible tells us about when Jehu was anointed king. It's starting in verse 4. So the young prophet did as he was told, and he went to Ramoth Gilead. And when he arrived there, he found Jehu sitting around with the other army officers. And he says this, I have a message for you, commander. And Jehu kind of looks around, and he goes, for which one of us? So what's that tell us about Jehu? He's a commander, right? But is he the commander, or is he one of many, right? So he's one of many commanders. Whose army do you think he's a commander in? Ahab's, yep. And so Jehu says, which one of us? And the prophet replies, for you, commander. So Jehu gets up, and he leaves the others and went into the house. Then the young prophet poured oil on Jehu's head and said, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I anoint you king over the Lord's people, Israel. You are to destroy the family of Ahab, your master. In this way I will revenge the murder of my prophets and all the Lord's servants who were killed by Jezebel. The entire family of Ahab must be wiped out. I will destroy every one of his male descendants, slave and free alike, anywhere in Israel. I will destroy the family of Ahab as I destroyed the families of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and of Baasha, son of Ahijah. Dogs will eat Ahab's wife's Jezebel at the plot of land in Jezreel, and no one will bury her. And then, and this is my favorite line out of the story, and then the young prophet opened the door and ran. That's not good news to hear, right? Have you ever found yourself like plopped into this big, huge mess? And it's a huge task, right? I'm a land surveyor, and a few years ago, one of my colleagues was awarded a contract through the Department of Transportation, and MDOT happens they use surveying services at a huge scale in Michigan, right? Like our normal surveys, we might come out and do a little, you know, somebody's yard, we'll show you where your property lines are, things like that. Well, imagine if you're asked to survey 20 miles of road. That's a lot of detail that has to be done. And that's the type of project that we got. It happened to be one of the largest survey projects that our company had ever been awarded. And, you know, all of us other project managers were like, oh, good job, great job bringing that project in. And we're being very sympathetic. We'll help you out however we can, right? And then 2 weeks later, just before the project's set to kick off, the guy puts in his resignation. And guess who got to do the project? I got to do the project. It was terrible. It was horrible. There was nothing good that came out of it. I mean, there might be some new roads, but from my standpoint, it wasn't worth the new roads. But anyways, we've all found ourselves in those times. Maybe you're a parent. This is one of the things when I was thinking about this point, it was the first thing that came to my mind. As a parent, you go to open your kid's door, and you look in there, and it's like, is there even one piece of clothing on a hanger or in a dresser drawer? Is there one toy that's in the toy box? And this was always my response. Karen will take care of it. And I'd shut the door and go on, right? And maybe you're remodeling your home. How many of you have started a Saturday morning, I'm going to do a quick remodel, and a month later, you're still working on it? And you like take something off, and you're like, I can't believe that this house is still standing. You know, you just strip off some drywall. Aren't there supposed to be studs back here? You know, things like that. I had one friend that started pulling some drywall off, realized the whole house. The guy had not, it wasn't that he didn't use the right wiring. Like, there's supposed to be three wires. I'm not an electrician, but there's like two that have current, and then there's the ground wire, right? So our house doesn't burn down. The previous owner had bought the three-wire electrical, whatever you call it. He took the time to pull the third wire out. He removed the ground. And so my friend had bought this house. Now he's got to totally rewire it. So we've all experienced where we end up being in a mess, and it's our job to clean it up. And we, in those situations, you've got two choices. You can roll up your sleeves and get busy and get some work done, or you can do like I did with the kids' rooms and just shut the door and leave it for your wife, right? Those are the choices. Well, Jehu, he chooses to roll up his sleeves. And what he did was nothing short of treason, right? It's easy for us just like, oh man, this is so cool. Jehu, he's a stud. But what he was doing was treasonous. If he fails, he's going to be killed. There's no doubt about that. He's putting his life on the line. And he's not going to die some kind of like, okay, we're going to try to treat you humanely. They're going to make an example out of this guy, right? So Jehu sets out a plan to do everything that God has commanded and eradicate the descendants of Ahab and to make sure that Jezebel is dead. And so what we see in those next verses in chapter 9 and 10 of 2 Kings is a very violent revolt. And I kind of struggled with this a little bit, right? Because we don't talk about this type of stuff in church. But it's in the Bible, right? So we're not going to get into a lot of the details. But Jehu has to take violence as a tool to eradicate Ahab. And so he does what God asked him. He kills off all of Ahab's descendants. And then he goes this next step further. And he recognizes that Baal worship is not right. and he eradicates Baal worship out of the northern tribes. And so God blesses him. And so Jehu rules for 28 years. And he's considered, in the northern tribes, he's considered one of the better kings. And then four of his descendants end up serving as king also. So God blessed him for what he did. So there's a lot we can learn from Jehu's story. And I see four truths that I want to point out today. The first one is, God frequently provides in ways we don't and would never expect. So God frequently provides in ways we don't and would never expect. So as we mentioned, the northern kingdom was a mess. And they'd had nine kings prior to Jehu. And each of them was increasingly worse, right? It was like they felt being wicked was some kind of competition. I don't know what the points would be, you know, for being wicked, but I don't know how you tally that up. But they were all wicked, and they continued to get worse. So here's the thing, is that we know that the followers of God suffered under that type of leadership. And they would have loved to see God just wipe them out, like instantly. Like they would have known about the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. And I'm sure that some of them were praying, boy, God, you know it'd be great if you'd just do a Sodom and Gomorrah, rain down hellfire and brimstone on this evil, wicked king, right? And that seemed like the fastest, best way to do that. But God doesn't always do that. God always moves in ways that are unexpected to us. So he chose to use Jehu. And as we mentioned, this is why it's unexpected to me. Jehu was a commander for who? Ahab, right? He was kind of part of the bad team. Why would God choose him? And I think when that passage when the young prophet runs from the room, I think that was part of it. I think that guy was pretty afraid of Jehu. He was like, boy, I don't want to be around him. I'm getting out of here. I think the followers of God at that time didn't think they could trust Jehu. So here's the thing. Besides his mom, I don't think there was anybody in the northern tribes that thought that Jehu could have the impact that he did. So outside of driving like a madman, Jehu brought a passion to what God called him to do. All right? And he just did it. He did the work that had to be done. And so when I look around here this morning, and I have to raise my hand, I can be a crazy driver, but I'm sure there's a lot of bad drivers out there. It's not just me. But I see also a lot of people that are good drivers. And it's not whether we're bad drivers, good drivers. It's about doing what God's called us to do. So probably 20-some years ago, I got asked to teach a fourth grade Sunday school class over the summer while I was, boy, I said 20, I just lied, 30-some years ago, I got asked to teach a fourth grade Sunday school class, bunch of little snotty-nosed boys, and I was just a college student. Now, I will say that at that time, I was super prideful. There wasn't anything I couldn't do, right? Some of you guys know what that's like. And I didn't know what I was walking into, but I did it over that summer. So some of you, that might be what it is. God's calling you to do something. Work in the clubhouse. Maybe he's calling you to mentor a young Christian, and that's something you've never done before. And all of us could sit there and go, I'm not cut out for that. I used to be on the bad team. I don't really have those skill sets. Or we can do what Jehu did and said, okay, God, I'm going to do that. And I'm going to do it with a passion that makes the difference in somebody's life. The second thing is, the second truth that I've noticed is bold actions inspire others to take bold actions. So many of you guys know a gentleman that used to, I use that term lightly, that used to attend here. His name's Mike Reed. You guys remember him somewhat? He used to attend Grace. He's a good friend of mine. He had to move away to the Grand Rapids area to be closer to work. But Mike and I, we love doing ministry together. And he'd have some crazy idea and I'd follow along with him. Well, one of his crazy ideas that we had was to do a paintball event. And so Mike and I went to a town called Pinckney. Have you guys ever heard of the town Pinckney? I don't think there's much there besides the fact that somebody over there decided to take like 100 acres of property and turn it into a paintball thing. And so Mike takes me over there, and there are hundreds of people to do this paintball event. It's basically a weekend-long paintball war, and it was so crazy. And I show up, and I'm not like a big paintball guy. I bought my Meyer Tippmann 4000 or whatever it is, and borrowed a mask and had some couple layers of clothes on because I had been shot by paintballs before. But you show up over there, you know, there's guys that are just totally muscle bound, but they're like in just jeans. They have no shirt on. they're gonna go and just do battle bare chested the way God intended it, I guess. And then there's guys that are like, one guy joined our little group, our team, and he walks up and he's in, you know what a ghillie suit is? It's like that grass, like fake grass thing. He's going to be in a fake grass outfit costume the whole day, hiding from us. And so he was, I'm going to be a sniper today. And we're like, okay, that's fun. So anyways, we go over there and we're playing and we're getting shot. And then the great thing is you get shot, you go out and you check back in. And so Mike and I and some other guys, we're on one side of a little ravine. On the other side of the ravine is a little cabin. And if you're at the edge of the ravine, they can shoot you. This is the thing about paintballs. If you have never been paintballing, the distance is very limited. So if you're like this on this edge of the ravine, you can get shot. You'll be out and you got to go back out. If you go back here and you get hit, the paintball doesn't break or it's really hard for them to hit you. So we're all standing back here far enough away and we're just like, all right, how are we going to get those? There's like two guys in this little cabin. How are we going to get them out of there? And we're talking. I think if we use a upper echelon something or other, and we're talking all these things, if you can flank them over here to the south, and we'll run a distraction thing over to the north, and we're coming up with all these ideas. And finally, Mike's just like, you know what, guys? They can't shoot us all. Let's go. And Mike starts running. I go, seriously, go 10 feet. I trip over a tree root, poof, face plant. I look up in time to see Mike just stop. Doop. I'm out. He got shot. So we had moved all of 10 feet, and our leader is out. But you know what? We moved 10 feet. And from that position, so I was laying on the ground, which turned out to be really hard to shoot me. And now all of a sudden, we're in a position where the people in the cabin are like, that's a lot of paintball coming at us. And they got scared and left. But it was all because that bold move that Mike took. Now, here's the thing. We see the same thing out of Jehu. All right, so Jehu, he goes and he attacks two kings at one time, and he kills them both. Once that happened, that's a bold move, would you not say? You go and take on two kings at the same time, and you take them out, that news spreads. So Jehu has taken out the first person from Ahab's family, his son that's currently reigning. Now he's going to go get Jezebel. So he goes to get Jezebel, and he goes up to her castle. I always think of it like as a medieval castle. I don't think it was that way in Israel, but that's the way I think. So I'm thinking like Rapunzel-type setting. So Jehu's down at the base of her castle, and he's like, "Hey, Jezebel, what's going on?" And she's like, it's really interesting because Jezebel, the Bible tells us she put on her makeup. She wanted to look good. She was going to try to sway him over with her womanly wiles. But he shows up, and she's got three attendants with him. And Jehu just looks up at the guys that are attending her, and he says, "How many of you guys are with me?" And two of the guys step forward. "We're with you." And Jehu says, "Well, chuck her down here." Yep. And off she goes. Bold actions inspire other bold actions. Those attendants, once they took that, they chucked her off, they also joined Jehu. Guess what happens if this revolt ends? They're right there with Jehu. They're going to be killed in probably the most inhumane way. So we see this lived out on a daily basis, and it's just a fact of who we are as humans, right? It's just a fact of who we are. And here's the thing. I want you to pay carefully attention to this. We can use that to help people. We can use it to help people. And that's what we do here at Grace. We try to do bold things that help people do bold things. So this summer, Grace Church on Wednesday nights, we're going to be doing events all throughout the communities that we serve and live in. And I just want to encourage you guys. Now, none of these things really seem all that bold outside of the fact that you've got to leave your house. And for some of us, quite honestly, our culture is getting this way. That's becoming more and more of a bold thing. But we're going to be going around to the communities around us and serving the people, doing acts of kindness, doing service projects. So I encourage you, this is your opportunity to do something bold, have an impact in these communities, and make a difference in someone else's lives. Third truth that I see in the life of Jehu is it's easier to crusade against someone else's sin than to deal with your own. So Jehu did a lot of things right. He did what God asked him to, right? And he went a little bit further. But in 2 Kings, what we see is that he didn't go quite far enough. So 2 Kings chapter 10, if you look at verse 28, 2 Kings 10, 28, it says this: "In this way, Jehu destroyed every trace of Baal worship from Israel. He did not, however, destroy the golden calves at Bethel and Dan, with which Jeroboam, son of Nebat, had caused Israel to sin. Nonetheless, the Lord said to Jehu, 'You have done well in following my instructions to destroy all the families of Ahab. Therefore, your descendants will be kings of Israel down to the fourth generation.' But," verse 31, "but Jehu did not obey the law of the Lord, the God of Israel, with all of his heart. He refused to turn from the sins that Jeroboam had led Israel to commit." So it makes sense that Jehu didn't eliminate those. If you think about it, he grew up with those golden calves. That's probably where his friends all gathered for social events. "Hey, let's all meet up at Dan and, you know, sacrifice a few sheep to the golden calf up there." It was much easier for him to say, "I'm not comfortable with these foreign gods," and get rid of the Baal, right? So here's the thing. Jesus recognizes this about us too, that it's much easier for us to look at other people's problems and try to help them with it. When we look at Matthew chapter 7, in verse 3, it says this, "Why do you look at a speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." Notice that Jesus doesn't tell us, don't try to help your neighbor by taking the sawdust out. What Jesus tells us is, take care of yourself first. Make sure that you're right first, so that you can truly help them. And then finally, the fourth thing that we have is God continues to pursue people. God chooses or continues to pursue people. Here's a chart that shows all the kings who ruled over the children of Israel. I don't know if you guys can see that or not. It's actually, yes, thank you for highlighting that. It begins with King Saul. If you're looking over here on the left, King Saul started in 1050 BC. And the last king to serve over the children of Israel, he was actually king of the kingdom of Judah, so the southern tribes. He wrapped up in 586 BC. So for a little over 500 years. And what we see in each of those kings, if you guys could see all the details on there, it tells whether they were a good king or a bad king. And there were far more bad kings than good kings. Far more. But God never quit pursuing them. And God hasn't stopped. We're 2,500 years later now. God hasn't stopped pursuing his people, pursuing lost and wayward people. That's why we're here today. God pursued me. I was lost and wayward at one time. Each of you were lost and wayward at one time, and God pursued you. He continues to do that. Now, here's the wonderful thing, is God asks us to join him in that. He's asked each of us to seek the lost, seek the wayward, and help them come to Christ. And we can do that by following these truths, these same truths that Jehu did. Now, hopefully you have different results. Hopefully you're not out slaughtering people. Hopefully you're out there actually helping people come to Christ. Be that unexpected person. Do something bold and live your life differently. We can have a tremendous impact on our community and the people around us if we'll do those things. Let's have a word of prayer. God, we thank you for this lesson that you've given us. We thank you for your word and the way that it speaks to us throughout ages. God, I just pray that you help us to live differently this week. Live in a manner that honors you. Live in a manner that helps people understand your love for them and the sacrifice that Jesus made. And we pray these things in his name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Aaron. You may be newer.